Hello and welcome to Still Any Good, the podcast where we run the risk of ruining our childhoods by revisiting fondly remembered films. My name's Robert Johnson, and tonight I'm joined by a man who didn't come all this way to die on top of some fucking mountain. Yes, it's Chris Webb.
Sue me.
What's in your bag, Chris?
Oh, you know, shirts, $100 million, usual thing, something like that anyway.
Yeah. Socks, yeah. I think.
Socks, the usual stuff, yes.
Is it sounding remarkably like Evil Dick from Third Rock from the Sun?
So I'm sorry, you can go, for free?
How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
It's a little bit warmer in here tonight because obviously I've got all my money out of the bank and we're just sat here burning it. Yeah. Sat around on a nice warm fire. It's lovely.
Plus you've got your
Got my Udi on. Yeah. I smashed the cabinet in the corner and got my Udi on.
Looking like a very cozy Jedi.
Oh, it's lovely, yeah. Winterwear Jedi. Yeah. It's very nice. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We're on the cusp of a long weekend.
Yes.
Our Matariki public holiday, which is quite exciting.
It's great.
It's really good. I've got 6 days of annual leave. Well, six days off. Found out on Monday that we are having a baby boy in November.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, that's so great. I'm a boy dad, you're a girl dad.
I am, yes.
Mm. And what about you? How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. I've had my annual leave because it's just coming to the end of the school holidays. So I took some time off. The idea was to hang out with the kids, but as usual, I had a list as long as your arm of stuff to do. And on the first day, when I was due to be hanging out with the girls, it was chucking it down with rain, so I thought, great, I'll stay in the house.
We'll
play a few video games, play some games. And our firewood was delivered unexpectedly.
Oh, yes, I saw this
Two cords.
I saw this on Twitter.
Firewood. That's a lot.
Oh, it sounds like you were punked by someone.
It was unbelievable.
Who delivers firewood and pissing rain?
Tumu fucking timber.
Oh, Tumu.
Yeah.
Oh,
I know. Okay. So, obviously, to be able to use it, we had to get out there like a shot. So, I got the girls.
Yeah.
I got a wheelbarrow. And they just never stopped, bless them.
Yeah.
Just kept working, kept working. It was brilliant.
It was like a Dickensian.
It really was. No, I paid them. I paid them $50.
Wow.
Between them, because they worked so hard.
Is that the going rate these days for like young kids to do
minimum
chores?
Wage? As I said to them, if they hadn't helped, I'd still be doing it now.
Yeah. Yeah, we wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'd be shifting bloody firewood into
it. So now we have a cozy house with firewood. We don't need to burn money. We can actually burn some firewood, which is nice. Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Tonight's film was your choice, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Speaking of being cold, I have chosen a film set in the snow. Some call it Die Hard on a Mountain.
Yeah.
I call it Cliffhanger.
You and many others call it Cliffhanger.
That's right. The producers of the film, most notably, Please,
I don't want to die.
You're not going to die.
Don't let me fall.
Matheson has been transferred from the Denver office to Frisco, and as a professional courtesy between offices, I was asked if he could hitch a ride.
Got plenty of room. Be glad to accommodate you.
We just got an emergency call that 5 climbers just ran off Combe Bluff.
I haven't climbed in months. You just lose the feel.
Maybe you mean the nerve.
Where's the helicopter?
What the hell's going on?
What are your names?
Tucker and Walker.
Well, Tucker and Walker, we're missing 3 bags.
What's in them?
None of your fucking business! Fudge!
Where is the money?
Wow, yeah. This was triggered like a sort of repressed memory in me when you suggested this film. Because it's a film that I just haven't thought of for decades.
Yeah.
So what's your sort of history with this one?
Well, I went to see it. That's normally how it goes.
Yeah.
I remember, for some reason, I was in Swansea. By myself, which is quite a long way from where I was living.
Yeah.
I'd been for a night out in Carmarthen the night before. Okay. Rock and roll Carmarthen.
Yeah, yeah. That means nothing to me, sorry.
Oh, it's probably best that way.
Okay.
like Dostin and mate's house.
Yeah.
Next day I had off work. And this is sort of how kind of backwater where I used to live. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to go and buy some decent records, I used to have to get on a train to Swansea for 2 hours and go to HMV. So I thought, well, I'm close because it's only about half an hour away. I'll go to Swansea. Mm-hmm. So I went, I bought some CDs. I thought, well, as I'm here, I'll go and see a film.
Yeah.
So the only thing that was on that I could see was Cliffhanger. I went to see it by myself.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. It really blew me away. At the time, there weren't really that many special effects like that. It just looked so authentic. They looked really high up.
It looked
really perilous.
They did.
And I just absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And then very much like you said, it just kind of vanished.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure why.
I'm not sure why.
It wasn't
either.
A flop. It was a big hit. It was Oscar nominated.
No.
It's just not something that people reference. I don't know why.
There's no problematic racial or sexual politics at play.
No.
You know.
Nobody blacks her.
No, there's no sort of like white South African black guy having a talk about it. Now you're making sense.
That's right.
There's no wild geese type kind of problems there.
But unlike other films set in the snow and in mountains, there isn't, let's say, a Maori actor putting on a Pakistani accent.
No.
There's none of that.
No.
So I don't understand why it vanished.
Yeah, I'm a bit the same actually, because I saw this at the movies too. This was during sort of like a kind of halcyon 1 or 2 year period where I was really good friends with the son of one of the local film critics. So he used to write for the Gisborne Herald. He was the film critic, and we used to basically get into the movies for 50 cents. It felt like it was like a 2 year period where I was almost at the movies every weekend, and it didn't matter what was on. Ended up seeing some really kind of random stuff.
That's the way.
But we went and saw Cliffhanger. And I remember, you know, enjoying it. Yeah, it was a good film. Not like being absolutely blown away by it. I was probably much more excited by the likes of sort of Jurassic Park that year.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and then I've just never revisited it. I don't think I've ever hired it out. I don't think I've ever watched it on Sky or anything. And never really thought about it. And then when you mentioned it, it was like, whoa, all these repressed memories coming back. And I kind of forgot what it was about. I knew it was Sylvester Stallone dropped the woman. I forgot.
That's what it's translated as in German.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone drops the woman.
Yeah.
You should see the Ghana poster. It's incredible.
You should see that one, it will almost be as exciting as the one that you've made up, babe, I'm sure. It's just kind of left no cultural sort of footprint. Yeah. That was kind of my experience.
I think when you first moved to New Zealand, which is like 17 years ago now, I'm sure it was on terrestrial telly not long after we got here.
And I
watched it then, and that's the last I've seen of it. I don't think it's been on TV since. If it has, I clearly missed it.
Yeah. So it's a 1993 film. As you mentioned, it's oft referred to as Die Hard on a Mountain.
Yes.
It was in this kind of peak.
Nice.
Sort of peaks, no pun intended, early to mid-90s period where there was this run of Die Hard on a ... films, right? And I'm thinking of the likes of Toy Soldiers, Die Hard at a Boarding School.
Under Siege.
Die Hard on a Battleship.
Mm.
Speed, Die Hard on a Bus, kind of.
Sort of.
Passenger 57, Executive Decision, Air Force One, Con Air, all kind of variations of Die Hard on a Plane. Under Siege 2, Die Hard on a Train. Sudden Death, Die Hard at a Sports Stadium, and the list goes on.
Wow.
There's many, many more. But there was just, every time these films came out, some smart aleck critic would just go, oh, it's Die Hard on a...
It's like the American version of in the British press going, this year's Full Monty.
Yeah, exactly. When you had all those heartwarming, brassed off type sort of...
Well, I know that Lee and Herring used to have a thing on their show called Lazy Journalist Slags, which was they'd look at a poster and it would be something meets something.
You know,
that film Frequency, which we should do for this, was Back to the Future meets Sixth Sense. And it's neither of those
things. No.
So it's just lazy journalism. Yeah. The Die Hard Honor is a great example of that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a Rennie Harlan film.
Rennie Harlan.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, the Finnish guy.
The Finnish guy, yeah.
Finnish chap. most famously, probably Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2, yep.
Nightmare on Elm Street 4, of course.
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, because famously, he was married to Gina Davis.
Indeed, lucky bastard.
He was a bit of a naughty boy.
Silly bastard.
He was a silly bastard. He got Gina Davis's, EA pregnant or something, had a fathered a son with her, so she divorced them. Of course, directed her in the mega bomb, Cutthroat Island.
Yes.
Which I've never seen.
Neither have I, actually. And yeah. To be honest, it looks all right.
It actually looks like a bit of fun, like a big budget.
It's like a pirate Hudson Hawk.
Yeah, piracy thing. So maybe one day a guest who thinks Cutthroat Island was good might want to come on and force
us. We challenge you.
We challenge you. Yeah. Director of two films that hold Guinness World Records. So Cutthroat Island was the largest box office loss at one point. I'm not sure if it's still a current.
I think Pluto Guinness. Nash overtook it.
Okay. And this film is a Guinness World Record holder for the costliest aerial stunt ever performed.
Ah.
Yeah. Which
is that the zip line?
That's the zip line. Mm. Yeah, he kind of, other than Deep Blue Sea.
Bluer, deeper. My hat is like a shark's fin.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
Just for me. I'm like the Welsh LL Cool J. I'm Cool J.
Yeah. Lovely. I quite like Deep Blue Sea.
I do too.
Yeah, yep. A bit of a guilty pleasure. But yeah, his career sort of kind of fell off
a
cliff.
Off a cliff. The last thing I saw of his was a film called Cleaner.
All right.
Which is Samuel L. Jackson is like, he cleans up murder scenes.
So he's like sort of the wolf from Pulp Fiction kind of thing.
Well, no, he's employed by the police.
So he's a
legal cleaner.
Okay.
And then it becomes a whodunit thriller where he cleans up a crime scene and then the murder is never reported.
So
he's trying to investigate. And his best friend, Ed Harris, is a police officer. Bet you can't guess who the murderer is.
God. It sounds like a fucking mid-90s Clint Eastwood film before he got prestigious.
Yeah.
God.
It's all right.
Yeah, right.
But I notice what he is doing now. The last thing that Rennie Harlin has done was something called Class Reunion 3.
Yeah,
which is a comedy in Finnish.
Oh, so he's gone back to his
his homeland.
That's good, I did read that he likes to, most of his movies contain a Finnish flag.
Yes, yes.
And did you spot the Finnish flag in this one?
I didn't see it, no, where was it?
So one of the, sort of the Bill and Ted dudes that the one that base jumps, the one that lives basically, his shoot has a Finnish flag on it.
Oh, okay,
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. This was kind of a comeback film for Stallone.
I was going to say, I think it was a comeback.
Yeah, because he had obviously done Rocky V, which was a disappointment.
Which one's Rocky V?
That's the one where he's got brain damage.
Was that the one with his son with an earring?
My ring's outside.
It's that one, isn't it?
Yeah, and then he trained he was an actual
Tommy
boxer.
Tommy Gunn,
who died of AIDS-related illness, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, in real life. And and then they end up having that big brawl out in the street. Mm. It's kind of just a downer, because he loses money, and he's kind of like poor again, and he's unwell.
All these robot butlers, nowhere to
be seen. Yeah, he's malfunctioning, Then, of course, he did Oscar, which was another flop.
John Landis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Luckily, as far as I'm aware,
no one died
on that set. And Stop and My Mom Will Shoot. So that was like he had a really bad run.
Yeah.
And then this was actually financially successful film.
Yeah. Because he'd wanted to work with Rennie Harlin for a while, hadn't he? I think they'd had a few aborted projects.
There was sort of a Carolco, I think, were wanting to do a few things with them, weren't they?
Yeah.
There was like a John Candy.
Something versus something.
Yeah, like Benjamin versus
Niedermeyer or something like that, yeah.
And then there was going to be this Isobar, which was a genetically enhanced monster breaks loose on a train or something.
And there was one to do with a terrorist attack in the wind.
Gale Force!
Yeah,
and it was going to be called Die Hard in a Hurricane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was how that was being kind of pitched. So, Cliffhanger's a better name than Gale Force, actually.
Just sounds like a weather reporter.
Yeah, it sort of sounds like Oprah's best friend, like a show about her or something.
Yeah.
But we sort of just start off and I thought this was almost like a Hitchcockian prelude, this film starts with. It reminded me, it was really like the setup almost of like a Hitchcock film.
It is a bloody good opening.
It's a really good opening, yeah. So
it's kind of shocking.
It is shocking. Is Michael Rooker and that lady that he's with, are they really on the top of that huge...
Well,
it looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They're basically like rangers. They're called rangers, aren't they?
Yes.
They sort of work in the Rocky Mountains, I want to say.
They're in Colorado.
Yeah, and they rescue people on mountains.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They're mountain rescue.
Yeah, so Sylvester Stallone is Gabe Walker.
He is. I was really disappointed that he's not actually called Cliffhanger.
That would have been great.
Like Bruce Willis should be called Die Hard.
He was called the Welsh.
Yeah, and he's Hard. Clifford Hanger. Because I think throughout my notes I have actually called him Cliff.
Yeah,
that would be brilliant.
Yeah, and every time someone calls him Gabe, I just think of Gabe Cash. It's like, call him Ray, not Gabe, yeah. Ray. So Janine Turner, who of course was Maggie in Northern Exposure,
yes,
and then sort of didn't do anything else really, and now she's like a motivational speaker or something.
Oh, is she? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So she's the chopper pilot.
Yep.
Sylvester Stallone is Gabe Walker, who is doing sort of like the same thing that Tom Cruise does at the start of Mission Impossible 2.
Absolutely.
Sort of hanging precariously off a rock face.
Yeah.
Except it's not actually Sylvester Stallone, it's a stuntman.
It's a stuntman, yeah.
Yeah. I was watching this going, oh my God, you would have thought Tom Cruise would have loved to have remade this and just done all the stunts himself.
Probably.
And he would have been able to do it. He's sort of like Dennis Waterman, but... I do the stunts,
Dennis Waterman.
I'll produce the film. I'll do the stunts
for you.
Yeah.
And immediately, some really nice photography, isn't there? Really great.
It's really, really well shot.
Quite an accomplished cinematographer, Alex Thompson. British cinematographer who's done everything from Deathline to Legend to Labyrinth to Excalibur.
Wow.
He's done some good stuff. Sort of slightly schlocky, but good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think after this, he kind of did Demolition Man straight after this.
Oh, okay.
Executive Decision, so he sort of just got into that kind of...
Yeah, the action.
The action thing. Yeah. But beautifully shot, I thought, this film.
I think so too, yeah.
Basically, Michael Rooker's character. Good old Michael Rooker.
Yep.
I like Michael Rooker.
I like Michael Rooker, yeah.
I was actually thinking this film would have been a bit more interesting if he was the Gabe character.
Yeah, because it's not wholly a Stallone vehicle, is it?
Not really.
It's a sort of a 60-40 kind of double act.
Yeah, it's a bit of an ensemble. And they also try and do their best to do the Die Hard thing, which is make him a normal guy. With, like, you know, obviously he's got this special skill. But that doesn't last too long. You know, I was watching it going, oh, this is actually relatively restrained, you know, like... They don't do the whole, oh, he's an ex-special ops.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
Green Beret, who's now a fucking mountain climber. It's just like, oh, he's just a normal guy who climbs mountains. And he doesn't seem to have like any special combat skills.
Mm.
He actually gets his ass handed to him at one point before impaling a guy on a stalactite.
Yeah.
And that's when it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah. As soon as they say, oh, I reckon he should climb up there with no ropes.
That's it.
Then the whole thing changes.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, they're trying to rescue Michael Rooker, who is Tucker.
Hal Tucker.
Hal Tucker. Gabe Walker and Hal Tucker.
Brilliant.
And he's hurt his knee.
Yeah.
And he's a silly idiot, isn't he?
He is a silly boy. He's a silly fool.
He's taken his girlfriend up on this... God knows how the fuck they got up there, because she's got no climbing experience.
And he's got a bad knee.
Yeah, and he's got a bad knee. And they're on the very pinnacle of this...
What would you call that? A plinth?
It looks like a...
Stack.
Yeah, what do they call it? Do they call it the tower or the... It's got a name. They give it...
They call it, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's just a gigantic stack, like the Old Man of Hoy. Yeah, it's like that, yeah.
It's just like a big, pointy...
Yeah.
Pointy mountain. And they're right up the top.
Pointy mountain.
It's a big fucking pointy mountain.
Pointy mountain.
Yeah, you can see that we've done our homework. and it looks... Obviously that the actors are on there. It looks quite...
It's convincing,
And they have to basically get them to the chopper, really, don't they? Or get them across
a
chasm.
I was confused by this.
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't they just get the chopper above and winch something down?
I don't know. Did they say something about winching?
It was too windy.
It was too windy, yeah.
It's windy, just sort of slightly lower over there.
Then there's
not so much wind. Like 10 meters over there.
Yeah.
Yes, you're fine.
Yeah, yeah, 20 feet that way.
Yeah.
So... They basically have to... They pull themselves across a line?
They make like a washing line.
They make it a washing line.
Which they then have to sort of shimmy across.
I'm really regretting not Googling climbing terminology now.
Now, I've been rescued and I don't know any of these terms.
Listeners, they set up a washing line.
They do.
They have to pull themselves across.
Yeah. And we all, it's not rotary, yeah. It's a long one. It's not a long, spinny one. Yeah.
And Tucker gets across, but the lady who's sort of fridged immediately, whose name I forget.
Sarah,
okay. She's obviously like shit scared as any normal human would be.
Yes.
Begins shimmying.
She does.
And Sylvester Stallone's character, he's being really nice and encouraging, and he's quite...
He's a little bit arrogant, he's a bit fun, yeah. But he seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah, he seems to know what he's doing, he's quite warm, it's quite a nice, warm sort of performance from Stallone.
They're having a bit of laugh at a bounce, because obviously, Jessie, she's Stallone's girl.
Yeah, Jessie the helicopter pilot is Stallone's girl.
Yeah.
Tucker is his best mate.
Yeah, and Sarah is Tucker's girl. Yeah.
So it's like a double date. And
it pretty much is,
An incredibly scary, life-threatening double date.
It's like The Bachelorette.
Those bloody challenges. escalating every season.
Yeah, she's not going to get a rose for this one. No way.
In an amazingly litigation-avoiding accident. That is all I could think of when I watched this. I was like, it's the United States. Someone's suing someone
for this.
They
used a real brand as well. You know.
Did they?
Yeah,
I didn't notice
proper
that.
Climbing brand. Apparently, there's something on the credits to say, we deliberately fixed it. These things are really safe, honest. Because they used a real... Because obviously, it's product placement as well.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So, her sort of buckle just snaps for some reason, doesn't it? And she drops. She's hanging precariously. Tucker basically says, what does he want to do?
I'm not sure.
He wants to do something else.
He says, you hold on, and it'll be all right. And Gabe goes, I better come and get you then.
Yeah, no, I've got to come and get her. And Tucker says, no, you'll be too heavy or something.
But I don't know what his plan is.
I don't know what plan B is, yeah.
Is he planning to, like, quickly put a net down there or a big bowl of jelly? I don't know.
I'm not sure what the alternative was.
No.
Yeah, Gabe sort of scurries across the washing line. Grabs Sarah's hand, but because of the gloves, to me this was like really the way it shot and everything, the suspense.
Yeah, absolutely.
The close-ups, it felt really Hitchcockian to me, like this sort of a setup of.
There were some nice cuts from the eyes to the faces to the hand.
Yeah, and then like a really gutting plummet. Really good plummeting, like really good.
I think there is good plummeting.
There's really good plummeting in this. It's sort of like the Alan Rickman school of plummeting.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
The real genuine...
Which was Die Hard
in
the Nakatomi Plaza.
Yeah.
As it's called.
Die Hard. But that real genuine, he's falling from a distance.
Yes.
It looks good.
Yeah.
She just... Fuck. She gone.
Her and her fluffy dog that she seemed to be carrying while climbing a mountain. I don't know.
That's the prologue.
I need to interrupt you.
You
do. Because about half an hour ago, we received a tweet from one of our listeners. Which is Wendy from Southern California.
Oh, Wendy.
Regular Wendy.
Yeah, good old Wendy. Yeah.
And she said she knew what we were doing, and so she sent something, and it said, # Sarah had it coming.
Ooh.
I know.
That's rough, Wendy.
Because she's watched it in preparation.
Yeah, okay.
So I think it's just foolhardiness with that cuddly dog. Really.
Yeah. That was silly.
Yeah.
Like, how the hell did Sarah... I still don't know how the hell Sarah got up to the top of that pointy mountain. I don't understand. Surely they climb past, like, you know, five sort of mummified corpses on the way up there.
You didn't even see the back of Pointy Mountain with its nice flight of stairs.
Yeah, that's a little... So
that's the setup.
That's the setup.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, if it was a Hitchcock film, he would develop a phobia of heights after that and kind of...
But he does develop a certain
phobia
reluctance.
Of saving people.
Yeah, a phobia of being helpful. Yeah. Helpophobia, I believe it's called. I'm not a doctor, but I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. My only criticism of that prologue is the bits where Stallone and Rooker and Sarah are just as they're sort of like attaching her to the line, you can just so tell that they're not on the top of a mountain.
There are certain bits where you can tell.
It's
but,
like,
you know, it's a film.
I know, but it's things like that are really like obvious these days.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
It's they are quite telling.
You couldn't have filmed this outside somewhere. Considering so many shots in this film, I wonder how they did them.
Yes.
Because so many of the shots are clearly in situ on location.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, like, they must have a big safety net under there out of a shot, or they must have... Yeah.
There's one shot in particular, which, you know, the answer is obviously they did it with computers.
Yeah.
But even now, it just looks absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Which we will talk about,
sure.
But I said, bloody hell, that's good.
So, 8 months later.
Yes.
Gabe is driving back. We don't know where he's been. And sort of like, I call them Bill and Ted, but I don't know kind of really what they're...
I've called them Pepsi Max.
Pepsi Max, yeah. There's two really bodacious, extreme sports dudes. Yeah.
The sort of people you really don't want to be anywhere near.
No, no. And they see Gabe driving past. They're at a petrol station and they're like, It's Gabe!
Dude!
Let's go, dude! And then they go drive beside him and, Gabe, where have you been, man? And they have like a really implausible conversation with
each while driving.
While driving, talking relatively quietly for
certainly is.
Yeah.
Because they say, oh, we're going base jumping.
Yeah.
Do you fancy coming?
Yeah.
And he quite rightly goes, nah. Nah, it's all right.
But yeah, he's been working up north or something. Yeah.
He's probably been like sanding boats in a vest or something like that.
Yeah.
That's what people do when they want to sort of get away.
Yeah. It's really beautifully shot, actually.
Yes.
Even like these sort of low angles that Rennie Harlan does, so that you can see like the vastness of these kind of like mountains in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
I was watching this throughout going, Rennie Harlan's actually a really good action director.
Absolutely.
Which is potentially why he's directed so many action films.
Yeah. It's a shame because his name kind of became a bit of a joke.
It did.
Particularly around, you know, the whole mess of The Exorcist prequel.
The second
Exorcist prequel, obviously, because the first one was binned.
Exorcist at the beginning.
Yeah.
And he did a really bad sort of Hercules film that bombed.
Oh, that was him.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And
Mindhunters.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Which
one.
Is behavioral science, which was a big thing at the time.
Yeah.
A group of behavioral science students from the FBI go on this kind of training retreat.
Okay.
It's got quite a good cast. You've got Val Kilmer.
Oh.
You've got Christian Slater.
Oh.
Johnny Lee Miller.
Oh, far out. That's kind of good.
The retreat soon becomes, oh, there's a killer among us, and we
don't
know
who it is. Okay.
But there's some quite good deaths in it.
Yeah.
Christian Slater is the shock death.
Oh.
And he's killed by liquid nitrogen.
Okay, so he's the one you think is the false protagonist.
Well, he's the famous person.
Yeah.
And he's the first one to get bumped off.
Yeah.
And he gets liquid nitrogen poured over him, and then he gets sliced.
Oh, wow, cool.
It's good fun.
All right.
It's quite a fun, it's a bit rubbish, but it's quite fun.
Yeah, that sounds worth watching,
actually. I enjoyed that. And that's one of the last things, that and Cleaner, probably the last things that I saw. I didn't bother with Hercules.
Yeah.
The Erotic Adventures of Hercules.
Yeah. But there are so many good set pieces in this, and they're always shot in a way that you can actually see the whole... It's a wide where you can see like the whole helicopter, person dangling off the helicopter, or you know, the two planes. You can just the geography of kind of everything is really clear.
Yep.
There's really good stunts. Half of this I was watching going, this would be perfectly fitting in a Bond film.
Absolutely.
A lot of it still stands up 30 years
it's,
old
it's
this
old,
year.
Yeah.
It's a really judicious use of slow-mo.
Yeah.
That he employs. To good effect.
I think so too, There's only one sort of bit, but quite justified.
But I was fully ready to watch an almost parodic, overblown Michael Bay, Bruckheimer type 90s action film, and it's not that. And I think, on a technical level, there's some great action sequences.
I think, as we've said, the cinematographer is very, very good, and you can tell.
Yeah.
But I think whoever did the action scene, second unit, whatever,
really
good as well.
So
he's surrounded himself with some very good people here.
Yeah, Stallone, actually, there's an interview where Stallone singles out the... he's talking about the director's cut.
Yeah.
And he basically says, this is a lot better than the director's cut because... I think the maximum distance that a human
can leap
is sort of like, 9 feet or something. And the director's cut had me like jumping a 200-foot kind of chasm.
And everybody laughed.
Yeah. But he goes on to say that the second unit was like incredible. It just looks so, so good.
Yeah.
The scenery looks amazing.
Yeah. It was shot in Europe, was it? Shot in Italy?
Yeah, Italy. Most of
Cortina,
the shot.
I think.
Yeah. Ford Cortina.
Ford Cortina, which is, of course, For Your Eyes Only, was Cortina.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, while Gabe is going back after 8 months, we're at the Denver Mint.
Ah.
Yeah. My favourite chocolate. Denver Mint.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a diehard honour film without some sort of feds.
Some feds and some cash.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's some feds, there's some treasury officers. I don't really know the difference.
What, some handle money?
Yeah. I'm guessing that's the treasury. Yeah. Well, for me, the treasurer is the one who says you can't spend anything and then they do something at the end of the year at the AGM.
Yeah. Jack Dalton from MacGyver's in there. Yeah, I recognise his moustache anywhere.
Oh, is that D-Day from Animal House? Bruce McGill.
Yes, Bruce McGill. Yeah. And disappointingly, I thought he was going to be significant.
Yeah.
They actually do quite a good fake out.
They do.
Because
there's a Treasury officer, Travers, who's transporting flipping great wadges of cash in a plane across America. And he's being escorted by the feds.
Yeah.
Because they think there's an inside man or something.
Yeah. And Travers, immediately, you're like, okay, that incredibly bold male pattern baldness.
Yeah, he's a bit Ted Levine.
He's just kind of dull. Oh, he's going to be dead. He's the first to die.
Yeah.
He's going to get off straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'm looking at Bruce McGill going, ooh.
He's always a bit untrustworthy.
Yeah. Shag Bruce Willis's wife in The Last Boy Scout. you're going to be the traitorous one, aren't you?
Yeah. So they're on their way. And there is a hijack on the plane.
And then the observing Fed also looks shifty.
He does.
And you're like, okay, no, you're the one who's going to be the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Fed pulls a gun because there's a reason he pulls a gun. Yeah. He doesn't trust something.
So the Fed notices that they're being tracked.
Oh, yes.
So he notices that there's another plane flying closely beside them. And then when he signals it, Travers kind of brushes it aside.
Yeah.
And I think that's when he goes, this is probably not standard operating procedure, and he pulls out his gun.
Pulls out like an Uzi 9mm. Standard federal weapon.
Where did he have that stashed?
Exactly.
In his little...
He's only got one leg.
Two-piece suit. Yeah. It's like... and then the other guys, Bruce McGill and co, pull guns on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Travers just offs them all straight away.
He does, yeah.
Blam, blam, blam.
Except for one pilot who's in on it.
Yeah. And then that pilot quickly offs his co-pilot.
He does.
It's all going down.
Yep. And the plane that's tracking them is a plane full of baddies.
Yep.
And then there's about 5 minutes of them just going, tango, tango.
Yeah.
Tango, tango.
Yeah.
Tango, tango, tango.
Yeah, 140, turn 240.
Tango, tango. Yeah. Tango, tango. And someone ordering the drinks.
Yeah, and numbers.
Yeah.
And then it was 2 minutes of that.
Two tangos.
Yeah.
Three lilts.
Yeah.
And a non-bongo. Yeah.
Down to 140. Turn at 240. None of this means anything, but it's there to add a veneer of authenticity.
Yeah. But this is an action movie. This was the only bit for me
that dragged. Okay.
And it's only there so they can showcase the world's most expensive stunt.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
I thought that bit was dull. As soon as they started doing the thing.
And then they do the sort of, the zip line from one plane to another, which I feel like I've seen several times since this film. Right?
I think so. But quite tellingly, this is probably the only time that you see it with both planes on it.
Yes.
And they did it.
Hence the costliness of it.
Well, yeah.
And I think stuntman Simon Crane was paid $1 million to cross once between two planes at 15,000 feet without the aid of any safety devices or trip photography. The insurance company refused to insure a stuntman for this, so Sylvester Stallone offered to reduce his own fee for the movie by the amount that the stunt cost to produce in order that the film could be made. And it was filmed in the United States, as such a stunt is illegal in Europe when most of the film was shot. Crane couldn't actually get inside the second plane, but good editing gives the appearance that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it is.
I remember being wowed by that in the cinema, most definitely.
Yeah, and it's just one of those Bond-type shots where it's like, this is a fucking great champagne stunt.
Yeah.
You know?
But also the fact is, the character that's doing it is this baldy, mustachioed schlub. It's not like Stallone doing it. It's just a bloke.
Yeah. You know, I read an article about this film and it made reference to Travers as something like action cinema's most ineffectual, like bland henchman sort of ever. Like,
he's just angry.
He's just this angry, middle-aged, just balding kind of...
He's close to retirement and he's really pissed off that he doesn't get what he wants. That's really relatable.
Yeah. But he is uncommon in these movies where normally like the henchmen are kind of like the towering, blonde, Nordic...
Yeah.
You know...
Because the other hench people in the film do fit that
sort of
bill.
Fit that a bit, yeah.
Because we've got the crazy knife guy.
Leon, isn't it?
Leon, yeah.
Most famous from Cool Runnings.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
We've got Cockney hard man, Craig Fairbrass.
Yeah.
He's a good fucking striker.
Oh, he's. I've got some notes about some stuff he says later. My word, I do.
And then Caroline Goodall.
Yeah.
They used to play like the nice mum or the nice sort of things.
She's the wife in Hook.
Yes, that's right.
Because I thought it was Janet McTeer, because she really looks like Janet McTeer, but it's not.
Well, yeah, because McTeer is an edgy hard ass too.
Yeah, she's great in it. She's really
good.
Yeah,
she is good.
And there's a few others that you don't really recognize.
No.
So you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, they're just fodder.
Yeah, and they are being led by Quayland.
Yes, Quaylan.
Quaylan. Is it Quaylan? Quaylan?
Quaylan.
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 Yeah, Q-U-A-L-E-N.
Now, he's meant to be British.
Yeah.
And he does put it on a little bit sometimes.
A little bit.
It's John Lithgow.
It's Lithgow.
Yeah. He's so wonderful in it.
He is. Apparently, his accent was criticised. I think, you know, it's probably in contrast to the genuinely British henchman that he's with. I just kind of look at it as a sort of, you know, mid-Atlantic kind of, you know...
I thought he was like Ivy League American,
yeah.
with a bit of poshness.
I mean, Lithgow almost talks like that anyway.
Exactly.
Didn't bother me.
No.
Yeah.
And he is quite delicious in it, because apparently Christopher Walken was originally cast.
Ah.
And that's a completely different kind of baddie.
It is.
John Lithgow sort of makes it fun.
Yeah.
Whereas Walken wouldn't do that, unless he was dancing. He would just be a different kind of baddie.
He'd be sort of just insane, I'd kind of think.
Yeah.
Menacingly insane.
Yeah, uncomfortable. Whereas this is, you kind of know where you are.
Yeah.
It's a bit more fitting to the style of the film.
Yeah, he's very much a Gruber brother. It's business for him. He's trying to, and this is in the exposition scene at the Treasury, which we kind of haven't mentioned, right, is that the reason we had the guy observing is because... there's this guy, Quaylan. He used to work for military intelligence.
Mm.
He's basically started sort of trafficking. He can shift the $100 million in marked bills, whatever. He can shift it across state lines and clean it and whatever.
And
you know, and he's been doing this kind of shit for a while.
Yeah.
And
so he's like a sort of a podgy Castor Troy, really,
isn't
he?
He is sort of a podgy Castor Troy, yeah. That's why they get the Fed on. And they didn't tell the Treasury guys because they've been noticing some...
They know there's an inside man.
Mm. And Paul Winfield. Forgot to mention Paul Winfield. Yeah, he's fittingly annoyed by this revelation. Anyway, they do the zipline thing.
But Travers has left the money on the plane, first plane, because he doesn't trust them.
Yeah.
He said if he brought the money down first, they'd kill him.
Yeah, I had a feeling that you wouldn't wait for me.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the pilot who's in on it,
yeah,
he's going to winch it down and then fly off. That's the plan. But
the
Fed,
despite
being shot several times.
He's sort of like the MVP of this film in a way.
He is, yeah. He wakes up a bit.
Because the pilot stands on his hand.
Because the pilot stands on his hand.
The pilot's walking through the aisle to get out. And he's just like, I'm just going to walk on your real wrist. And it sort of wakes him up from his bullet-addled stupor.
And he shoots the pilot.
Yeah. And then riddles the other plane with
bullets.
He does,
yeah. He shoots a plane from...
And he kills a sniper. There's a sniper there that's trying to off him and shoots him. He does a great job.
Of course, the baddie pilot has set the plane to explode.
Yeah.
So he's not going to fly away, obviously. That's my mistake. And so the plane blows up while the money is in situ on the zip wire.
Yeah.
And so it drops into the mountains.
And there's a big exploding plane, which I thought, if that actually happened, it's a little bit like Death Star in Endor. I kind of thought, actually, that other plane that's flying really close to it would probably be quite...
It's going to go, some shrapnel's going to go into those props, isn't it? Yeah.
But anyway, they've got to land that plane anyway, or crash land it, because it's been riddled with bullets.
Yes.
And they do a nice little crash landing into the snowy mountains.
Luckily, they have this sort of tracking device,
sort
of electronic game, handheld game
Yeah,
thing.
There's a lot of sort of like early 90s Atari kind of level sort of graphic-y thingies that
Absolutely.
They're holding.
Yeah. But it tells them that the three cases full of money
are
scattered all over the mountains.
Yep.
Thankfully, not on top of whatever we called it earlier.
Pointy Mountain.
On top of Pointy Mountain.
No.
Thankfully.
They're more on sort of Roundy Mountain.
Yeah. Snowy Mountain.
Yeah, Snowy Mountain.
This is 8 months later because, of course, it's now winter.
Yeah, yes.
So while all this is happening, they send a distress message to get rescued. And that goes through to Mountain Rescue HQ, where Hal seems to be a bit happier these days.
Yeah.
Because he's having a nice old time with Pa Walton.
Yes.
Would you call him John Mann?
Yeah.
John Mann Walton?
Yeah. He's a helicopter pilot too.
He's a helicopter pilot as well, yeah.
And he's painting a picture of a banana eating monkey.
Yes.
On some glass.
I don't know why either.
And Jesse's there. And of course, Gabe has come back to try and win Jesse back.
Yeah.
Basically, he said, look, I've come back to get you. Come with me. She says no, and he says, oh, okay, I better get my stuff then.
Yeah,
the rest of
see
the
you
stuff.
Then.
I actually came back to get my baseball cards. But there's this really lovely shot. It's from behind Jesse. She's sort of out looking at Stallone, and he gets in his Jeep and drives off. And the way that the camera just kind of pulls back from her.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful shot. And it's just one of those, there's so many shots like this where I'm like, this film has no business having beautiful shots like
it's
this.
It's meant to be a dumb action film, but it's shot really nicely.
It's shot really nice. It really just, that could be quite a slow part of the film. Mm. It's like real filler. It's compelling because it's shot so beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. So he's about to go. But they get this distress call.
Yeah.
Hal goes to check it out.
Mm. So Jesse asks, does she ask Gabe to come with them?
Oh, she does.
Yeah, and she's just sort of like, she's dissed him a bit. Because he basically says in the previous scene, you know, like, oh, look, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I've been crying for 8 months. Yeah. I've lost the feel. And then and she went, don't you mean the nerve?
Mm.
I was like, whew.
Jesus, that's awful.
Yeah.
She does the, we all lost something that day. Yeah. She does one of those sort of lectures as well.
Yeah, yeah. But she also does the whole kind of like, well, no one's blaming you. Except Hal. But, you know, it wasn't your fault. It was actually, if anyone's fault, it was Hal's fault.
For taking her up there, yeah.
But I guess, you know, I haven't dropped the woman to her death, so I don't know how he feels. In fact, I think my one criticism of this film is the dialogue, because I think there is actually a moment where Gabe says to her, you don't know how this feels.
Because he rewrote it, didn't he?
Because
the writing of this is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because Michael Goldeneye France presented the script, which Stallone then rewrote. So enough to get a writing credit. But then a mountaineer comes out of the woodwork and says, that was my idea. That's why the credits have this weird premise. Based on a premise by.
John Long.
Who was a mountaineer. And apparently in the 80s, he said to somebody, can you imagine if there was like an action film about mountains? They paid him like about $500,000 or something.
I thought he had a novella or something.
It was basically that.
Yeah.
So there's about four writers' credits.
Yeah.
Because I think somebody else did some uncredited work on it. But the two ones that you see are Michael.
But it is curious, isn't it? Based on a premise by.
I mean,
normally it would be story by or something.
Yeah. Tunes whistled by Garth Marenghi.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But, okay. Nice payday for him.
Indeed, yeah. We could do that.
We could,
there's so many times that we've said, imagine that. And then it gets fucking made.
And then it fucking gets made.
I remember when we were pitching to a production company in New Zealand, a sort of a romantic comedy film about the dynamics between people who go quizzing.
Yes.
And that producer said to me,
yeah.
It's a good idea. Maybe it would work as a TV show. And about 18 months later, that production company brought out Nothing Trivial.
Yeah.
A TV series about quizzes.
Yeah, I had a similar experience with, remember Dirty Creatures?
I do remember Dirty Creatures.
That sort of got a couple of development rounds at a production company. Got a couple of reads, I should say.
Same production company.
Yeah. And then not long after, a show, I can't even remember what it was called, but it had a very...
It was called like Diplomatic Immunity. Yeah.
And it had quite similar
dynamics.
Yeah. Very, very similar dynamics. Not quite the same plot, but very, very similar.
And I noticed it didn't say... Based on a premise
by Robert Johnson. No, it fucking didn't.
No, so these things happen.
Yeah. And in New Zealand, where it's so small, you kind of think, you did just fucking rip me off, didn't you?
Yeah.
Bastards.
I'm convinced. I know we talked about our retirement village
and the
other one that got made.
Yeah.
When I watched that, there is a scene in that which is identical to something that we wrote.
Identical. And because there's all the same executives working with them and maybe not even deliberately plagiarising us, but going, you know what? It would be really funny if you did this.
Yeah. And it's then, like tweet theft.
Yeah. And then 3 weeks later going, that's right. I stole that joke.
Yeah. But they won't know.
No.
They won't do anything about it.
Bastards.
And we didn't.
Yeah. Anyway. Look at us now.
Yeah.
Sitting in a... sitting in a
studio.
They're
not sitting in a garage in an hoodie, are they? Huh? Who's laughing now?
Yeah, so where were we? Gabe clearly gets guilted into helping out. Because Tucker starts climbing up to go and rescue them, and then he sort of finds Gabe waiting for him, like perched like a bird on a little ledge. Tucker's immediately like, man, what are you doing here, man?
Well, he tells him to take his ass down.
And they have a little hustle.
They do.
Tucker clearly blames Gabe for Sarah's death.
Well, he grabs him by the lapels and dangles him off
a cliff. Yeah.
And it is him being dangled off
the cliff. Yeah, it looks, it's one of those shots where, that I was mentioning before, we're looking at it going,
yeah, that's a long way down.
Yeah. But they begrudgingly agree to work together and rescue these people.
Yep. They're being watched by the baddies, and as soon as they get to the plane, they're then held at gunpoint. And so they're told to go and find the bags. They go on this ledge. It's a very narrow, high up ledge.
Yeah.
And Gabe says, well, there's one right up there. And so Quaylen says, fetch, tells Gabe to go and get it.
Yeah.
They take his coat and his climbing gear, and they say it's in case he tries anything, you know, like climbing.
Yeah.
Which they told him to do.
Yeah, very helpful.
Yeah, I really thought it through. So he basically just scales the sheer cliff with just his enormous arms. Basically. But he's up, and he's found the first case. And inside there's a ton of cash.
A lot of cash. Yeah, not Gabe cash.
No.
It's not Gabe's cash.
And there's no Tango Tango either.
No. But...
He says when he comes down, retire him.
Yeah, and so Hal does a lot of this throughout the
film.
He does.
He's a little grass, isn't he? Yeah.
He's a little fucking narc. He just immediately shouts out like, Gabe, they're going to kill you if you come back down! So Gabe, because he's tied by his ankle, isn't he?
Yeah.
To the rope. So he quickly sort of uses a bit of equipment.
Well, it's like a bit of barbecuing cutlery, basically, isn't it?
A fish slice.
A pair of tongs.
Yeah.
He's just going,
yeah, he pulls out his tongs and just bashes through the rope. Pulls out a steak knife. And
if only he had a steak knife.
Yeah, get some olive oil and squirt some in their eyes. And then does he throw it? Is that when he throws it? Oh, no, because then... No.
They cause an avalanche with their big guns. Yeah.
And then some foolish henchman is standing there with his big gun. And as Gabe sort of sees the avalanche kind of descending upon him, he sort of hides under a ledge.
Yes.
Then he throws the
Because they see all the money flying by everywhere,
And then the henchman gets taken out by the avalanche.
He does. I don't know which henchman it was.
It was sort of a faceless, nameless...
Was it the one with the hair? There's always one with the ponytail. I think it was him.
Kind of heavy metal-headed one. Yeah.
Yeah. But they think Gabe has also fallen and gone. So Hal radios in to say it was a fake call, a bogey call. Then he says something to Jesse, which, you know, is like a code. He says, oh, we're way up on the top bit of Sausage Mountain. And she goes, well, there isn't a Sausage Mountain. It's something like that.
Which, you know, your
layman wouldn't know, but you mountain people.
Yeah, a classic trope.
So she gets John Mann Walton to fly her up there. And this is where we get the shot I was talking about, where it starts on Stallone's face sort of in a blizzard, and his face is full sideways mouth.
It's up
by his ear at this point. It really is just up there. Like
it's like a Picasso. Yeah.
He's laughing on the other side of his face. And the camera slowly backs away, and you think, oh, he's quite high there.
Yeah.
And then it backs away some more. And you think, he's really high there.
Yeah.
And then it keeps backing off.
Yeah.
It's clearly an effect.
But it looks so fucking good. Real.
It shows how isolated he is, just on the sheer wall, which is huge.
It's basically that shot from Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
But in a
blizzard. In the snow,
yeah. Because I saw that and I could not see the join. If that was like his CGI face on someone else's body, or if that was like, I don't know, a matte painting at some point or whatever.
Or if they tricked us and he's laying on the floor like Batman, you know, and they just move upwards. I don't know, but it's so effective.
I saw that and I was convinced... Until I kind of read about his like fear of heights, and I was convinced Stallone
put him on a mountain.
Yeah, they put him on a mountain, and I still don't know how they did that.
No, it's brilliant.
It's a really high concept shot that looks great,
and it backs off much more than you expected. It just keeps going.
The camera is so confident and swooping, and there are so many crane shots, and it's just constantly. It's almost like Peter Jackson-esque, and throughout the whole film, and it just makes it so fun to watch.
Mm. He manages to climb up the mountain.
Yeah.
And there's one of those rescue huts there
where
Jesse is waiting. He's a bit nippy.
It's like a dock hut.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds fair. Yeah. And she gets him a lovely bit of knitwear from the cabinet. It's really nice.
Yeah, I love my knitwear.
It's one of those collarless, sort of like a granddad shirt made of wool.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Really nice. Yeah.
And he tells her everything. They get to the case first, so they've located the second case.
Yeah.
But Gabe, he sort of remembers where it was briefly looking at the scanner thing.
Yeah.
And so he says, got a pencil. So he's got a plan.
Yeah. And so when Quaylen and them get there, that's when there's a little snowman that
That's right, yeah.
And they've emptied out the case.
Yep.
And they've written, one to trade.
Yeah.
Presumably trade, what, Hal?
Hal for the money. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. They want to trade what? Like...
A flask of tea? Yeah, you want to trade? Frozen orange juice. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some biscuits.
So they go looking for him.
Mm.
And of course they have night vision goggles.
Yeah.
Because they were going to be flying on a plane somewhere else in broad daylight. So it's nice they brought their night vision goggles with them.
Yeah. Just in case. Yeah.
And this is the other sort of nameless, faceless one. He sees them and shoots at them. And Gabe very cleverly blinds him with a flare, which I thought was
It's a great little thing. Yeah. And then a little sequence I like to call Slay Stallone. Which is actually like the most ridiculous part of the movie.
How long is that hill?
So they kind of have a tussle and then they fall down this incline of this hill.
Yeah, punching each other as they're sliding.
And they exchange turns of using the other one as a sled.
Yeah.
So the guy is riding Sly Stallone as a sled for a while, and then they change over, and it just goes on forever. It is comically long. It is like a piss take.
Very much so. Yeah, and it's great fun.
Something that Leslie Nielsen would do in a in a Naked Gun film. And then they basically get to the edge. Stallone gets a little.
He's got an ice pick
out at the last minute. To sort of save himself, that old kind of action move, and then the other guy just slides right off.
He's gone. Yeah. Yeah. And Hal loves it. He's seen all that and he loves it. Craig Fairbrass doesn't like it. He gets all cockney in his face. We don't like
He's a fucking grumpy prick.
He's
He's really angry throughout the whole fucking thing.
He really is. Yeah. You'd think he'd cheer up a bit.
Is he Delmar or something? Delmar.
He's called Delmar.
Yeah. Which doesn't feel like a very cockney name.
What is it, Del?
No, it's
like Del Boy. Yeah, no. Is he called Derek Ma? Because that's Cockney. Yeah.
No, it's just like
all right,
it's like Delmar.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like Del Trotter.
Yeah.
The baddies then get to the shelter, mm-hmm. and they know that they've been there because obviously things have been used.
It looks like some knitwear is missing.
And meanwhile, Gabe and Jesse are hiding out in a cave.
Yeah.
They're using the money.
They burn the money.
And I think this is a very good joke.
Yeah.
Where Stallone says it costs a fortune to heat this place. And that's a really good joke.
That is a good joke.
I laughed out loud. Because they've literally burnt like $10 million or $30 million or something like that. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So they cuddle up and they get some sleep, which is nice.
Yeah.
Next morning. So the baddies with Hal. Now they're looking for the third case.
Gabe and Jesse are basically like, "No, we're going to beat them. We're going to beat them to this case."
Yeah. But oh dear, those Pepsi Max kids are out. And Hal says, "You know, they're just kids.
Yeah,
leave them. They're just kids." So Hal does the same thing.
Yeah.
Run! They're going to kill you. Run! They're going to kill you. And they kind of go, "Oh, hey, dude. The hairy one gets gunned down.
Pepsi gets killed. Yeah.
Max base jumps. Max base jumps.
Yeah.
He ends up kind of doing a comedy. Whoa! And of course, Hal is understandably upset.
Yeah.
So Quaylen says, "Sue me."
Yeah.
Like a suit. Sue me. But Gabe and Jesse are still on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into another small cave to keep up with the baddies.
Yeah.
But there are some bats in there.
Stallone puts his hand in some bat shit.
Some guano.
Some guano.
Yeah.
Some bat guano. And then it was kind of just a pointless scene. He's like, up and he's like,
there's some bats.
Yeah, and they just do like a little bat swarm.
Yeah.
Which is quite a freaky little scene, but it's like.
There's no need for it.
No need for it at all.
No, because it doesn't give away their location.
No, exactly. Like that's the thing. I was like, well, you've got guys with actual assault rifles chasing you. Yeah. I wouldn't be worried about the bats.
Yeah. But John Manwalton, he's still up in his chopper and he finds Max hanging from the tree.
Yeah.
Being sort of. Nibbled on by wolves.
Yeah.
So he cuts him down.
He's wounded but alive.
Yes. Then we're at the Temple of Doom rope bridge.
Yeah, it's a good rope bridge. There's some good rope bridge work to do. Michael Rooker sprints over
there.
He
does indeed, And he looks high up when he does it.
Yeah, it does. It looks high up.
So they're crossing the rope bridge, but scary knife guy, Leon,
yeah.
He waits behind because he sees sort of gay pop his head out of a little hole. Like
a little meerkat.
Yeah. Pops up, yeah. And they have a bit of a scrap. He tells him he's burned the money.
Yeah.
He
beats the shit out of him. Leon beats the shit out of him.
Give him a right old pummeling.
Yeah. And this is sort of like, oh, yeah, this is not a normal... I can't believe Stallone allowed his ego.
Yeah.
And then right at the end...
He didn't. Yeah.
You punched like a sissy, which is like, oh, God.
Come on.
And then he picks him up and just lifts him up into a stalactite and impales him on a stalactite. Yeah, because he's quite nasty too, Leon. He's, you know...
Oh, he is. Yeah, he's got that nasty name.
I'm a bit of a nastier bitch.
Yeah.
And, Yeah. But he does some nice little karate kicks and things. And that's, yeah, that is the point where officially Gabe goes from being like your John McClane everyman to your Stallone-esque.
Yeah, he turns into sort of like Rambo at this stage, doesn't he? Yeah.
Slow-mo running after this.
Yeah, always happens. Mm. They're also then trying to blow the whole place up.
Mm.
So there's a 5-minute timer. We know this because Hal says... You got 5 minutes before they blow it up. He's great. Shouty exposition.
Someone should do a supercut of all the scenes where Hal is just yelling shit at Gabe or Pepsi Max or
shouty warnings.
And every time, like the terrorists are just like, "Oh, for fuck's sakes!"
Why don't they
just duct tape his face, his mouth shut, or something, or just like knuckle his teeth out, or something? They only need him for his climbing ability. Like,
just do something.
Yeah. And then he would just be like,
But just as it's about to explode, they do this big sort of pendulous swing on the rope.
Yeah.
Gabe and Jesse.
Yeah.
They're going back and forth, and they just land on the ledge just at the right time.
Yeah.
And she falls, and he just reaches down and grabs her.
Yeah.
Looks familiar.
Oh, yes. Mm. But this time...
She doesn't have a cuddly dog with her.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And he hasn't got a bad knee.
Yeah. Frank?
John Manwalton. Frank. Yeah. He notices a body on the ground and a flare.
Yeah.
So he goes down to investigate, and Hal shouts. Oh, no, he doesn't. He tries. They're holding him down. And he's sort of spluttering, going, Frank!
Yeah.
So they finally worked out how to shut him up.
Yeah.
Frank!
And it's Caroline Goodall playing possum, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then Delmar just riddles Frank with bullets.
He does.
And Hal slow-mo runs to Frank.
He does.
And sort of cradles him. And some very horrible, kind of confused, shocked, dying looks from Frank, actually.
Yeah,
He has that real, like...
What am I going to tell Jimbo and Jason?
I never finished my painting of the banana eating a monkey.
Who's going to look after Elizabeth now? He's so worried.
But he hands Hal his knife.
He pops his knife, he does.
Comes in handy.
Yeah. And now Gabe and Jesse are at that rope bridge.
Yeah.
Which is also wired to explode. And they do a nice slow-mo run as the bridge blows, which is good. And then Travers, he's starting to realise that they may not be equal partners.
Mm-mm.
So he doesn't give Quaylen the code for the little monitor to find the third case.
Yeah.
And so Quaylen, as a sort of bargaining chip, kills Crystal.
I didn't quite understand that.
The
bargaining chip element of that, I didn't...
Was it like a mutiny thing? So it could have been the case that if he had killed Quaylen, then Crystal could have still flown them out of there.
By killing Crystal,
he says, now I'm the only one who can get us out of here.
Yeah.
We're partners again.
Yeah. That's it. I think
that's what happened.
No, because I must have like looked away for like 30 seconds or something. When that happened, I was like, why has he killed her? I don't get it. Yeah.
Because he says the thing to real love is sacrifice.
Yeah.
Just a simple word. So Gabe sends Jesse away to get some help. No, I don't know who's going to come. Everyone's dead or on the mountain shouting and giving things away.
Yeah.
We managed to get to that final case first. Travers and Craig Fearbrass, Delmar.
Yeah.
They take Hal to go and look for the case.
Yeah.
And then they get a signal to kill Hal. They don't need him anymore because they know where the case is.
Yeah.
So Hal calls Delmar an asshole.
Yeah.
And Hal says, "You're a lad math punk schlag." And he does actually call him a schlag.
Yeah. Did they mistakenly swap the dialogue around or something?
A loudmouth punk schlag. Superb. He gives him a very nasty headbutt. And then he says, and this is an Englishman saying this, played by an Englishman.
Yeah.
He says, Do you like soccer? Well, here's a penalty kick. No. Self-respecting English.
No.
Would ever say that. I know soccer is an English term.
I know.
Actually.
Yeah. But, you know, no.
British people don't use it.
No. No.
Yeah.
No.
And I'm surprised Fairbrass never went, you know.
Well, he might have complained about it.
We wouldn't say that, you punk schlags.
Yeah. Come and flop my flop.
Yeah. That's right.
You slave,
bitch.
Yeah.
And he gives him a right old battering.
Yeah, he kicks the shit out of him.
And what I did like about this is where he's, you know, he's gearing up. He's going to be the final kick that will finish you off.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think, oh, this is the bit where he fights back and he gets it. Doesn't.
No.
He just kicks him again.
Yeah.
And he's out for the count.
Yeah, he's dangling off the cliff.
Yeah.
He's hanging off the cliff.
He is hanging off the cliff.
Yeah.
It's a cliffhanger.
It's a literal cliffhanger.
Literal cliffhanger. Yeah. But luckily, he's got the Walton knife.
Yeah, he has, yeah. Used for whittling sticks
for whittling on Walton Mountain.
On the rocking chair on Walton Mountain.
A stranger came to Walton Mountain that day, changed our lives forever, called me a loudmouth punk slag.
Sort of stabs him in the leg, does he? Sort of like,
he gets him sort of the,
gets him in
the ankle. Yeah, like the knee or the ankle. Somewhere not very nice.
Then he grabs his like shotgun off him at the time and then sort of,
he says, "Season's over, asshole."
Yeah, that's a real Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Literally
thing.
Shoots him off a cliff.
Yeah.
And you get a really good splatter sound effect.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where it hits, like the rock or something, but it's a real splat.
It's preposterous but satisfying.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thoroughly deserved.
Yeah.
And then Travers, who of course has the monitor, gets a signal for the case.
Yeah.
But it seems to be moving.
Yes.
That's because it's not a case. Gabe has tied it to a rabbit.
So,
of course he has.
Apparently, they had to reshoot this because apparently the rabbit bought it.
Yeah.
And the test audiences did not like that.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So they had to do that.
They're all right with one of the Waltons being killed.
Yeah.
Pepsi and Max.
Yeah.
But a rabbit.
Yeah.
No way.
So the rabbit lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So of course, because of that, he realizes that Gabe is, because it's about four times they think they've killed him.
Yeah.
And they realize, no, he's still alive.
Yeah.
He's had enough. Travers is basically, right, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm going for a manhunt.
Gabe's under the ice.
Yeah. So he goes after Gabe. He goes across this little bridge.
Yeah.
And Gabe kind of, he jumps up and grabs him from under
the
bridge.
Yeah.
And then goes through the ice.
Yes.
And then he's sort of dragged under the ice, Omen 2 style.
Yeah.
But Travers is waiting for him. He's going to shoot him with his big gun. Luckily, Gabe has got one of those sort of, would you call it like a nail gun that mountaineers use?
Well, apparently this is fake.
It's fictional, isn't it?
Yeah. Apparently there was a lot of criticism of this film from the climbing community.
Mm.
And one of the criticisms was this fictional piton sort of shooting gun. Chekhov's fictional piton shooting gun that they show sort of early in the movie, they show them using
it to shoot it into
some rock. Purely to have this scene, it does seem like an unnecessary thing to do.
I suppose this is the authenticity that you can't shoot a real gun underwater, which a lot of films get wrong.
Yeah.
So he is shooting something that you can actually use a projectile underwater.
I guess.
But mountaineers complaining about the authenticity in this.
I know.
That's like Uber drivers moaning about the Fast and the Furious, isn't it?
I guess so.
Come on.
It would have been good if they'd used that fictional piton gun for some cool stuff.
Yeah, like falling
it,
and...
Yeah, they used it a bit more, so it was like rather than just like, okay, we want to have a scene where he shoots someone from underwater in an ice
thing. Yeah. Still good, though.
They could have contrived the reason for him to have a harpoon. Like Clint Eastwood in the Deadpool.
God! Fucking Deadpool.
Like maybe in that, you know, in that hut, he was like, "Ooh, there's a harpoon in here, Jesse.
Yeah.
This will come in handy." Anyway.
Yeah. He shoots Travers.
He shoots.
So Travers is gone. Yeah. So the only one left now is Quenham.
Yeah.
So Jesse is still running for help, just aimlessly around the mountains, looking for anyone who can help her.
Yeah.
And the chopper arrives. Of course, she thinks it's Frank.
No.
But it's not. It's Quenham.
Yep.
And as he's sort of hovering, she's on top of a sort of hill, a hillock, if you will.
Yeah.
And he's there just holding a gun at 30 or 40 feet away in a helicopter, and she gives up. She could have just sort of gone down the hill a little
bit.
Just moved, gone into a cave.
The alternative is near certain death. Why not just run?
It would be quite easy to get away from a hovering helicopter when you're on a hill.
Yes.
Quite easy. Just go to the other side of the hill.
There's only so many things they
just do that roly thing down the hill. You'd be all right.
Yeah.
But no, she gives herself up.
Yeah. And Hal and Gabe have reunited at this point, haven't they?
Yeah. And they're sort of on the radio to Quail and going, you know, it's just you left now.
Yeah.
He calls them resilient bastards.
That is a wonderful insult, isn't it?
I'm just like using that.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah.
When I'm in traffic.
Someone cuts
me up. You resilient bastard.
Yeah. We've just had a, you know, devastating cyclone here. When I go and talk to a community group, I'm going to just like lead off with, hey, you resilient bastards.
But he is also resilient.
Yeah.
Because he, of course, tells Gabe that he has Jesse.
Mm.
And so it is time to trade, perhaps.
Yeah.
So they meet at the highest point. Quite crucially, Gabe selects the highest point.
Yeah.
Why does he do that then? But he selects the highest point.
Mm.
And so Gabe, of course, grabs the money and he throws it into the blades.
Yes.
So the money all gets chopped up.
Yeah.
And of course it buggers up the helicopter.
Yeah, and Lithgow looks really fucked off about that.
And then he harnesses, because obviously, like I said, he's chosen the highest point.
Yeah.
There's this sort of rusty ladder
off
the edge of the mountain. Yeah. So he harnesses the helicopter to the rusty ladder.
Yeah.
Clever.
Yeah.
But it still chases him. So he does his sideways grimace, runs in slow-mo.
Yeah.
And jumps off the mountain, clings onto the ladder.
Yeah. How... shoots the helicopter.
He does. Yeah. He starts blasting away. Just everywhere.
Instead of shouting, he's shooting. He's either shouting or shooting.
Just make your mind up, mate. Yeah. Chopper sort of hanging off the cliff. Gabe falls, lands on the chopper.
They have a fight on there, and it looks fucking great.
It's good.
It's another practical stunt where like you can see this prop helicopter on the side of this cliff and then these guys having a fist fight.
There are two men fighting on a chopper, the tarnished to a cliff.
Yeah, that looks great. Yeah. It looks like something out of a Bond film. Well, it should be out of a Bond
film. Not in Daniel Craig's one.
These days it would be a CGI thing.
Like that Mexico City thing. But the chopper's not going to hold on much longer. It's going.
Mm.
So just at the last second, he kicks Quaylen into the chopper.
Yeah.
Just as it falls. And he grabs onto the ladder. He's safe.
He does a Arnie-esque sort of line reading there as well when he says, "Remember, shithead, keep your arms and legs in the vehicle at all times." Yeah. That's the remember shithead for me.
Yeah, remember shithead, yeah. And then, of course, we have an exploding helicopter.
Yay!
I think this is our third exploding helicopter. Maybe our fourth, actually.
Has exploding helicopter Twitter account done?
I'd imagine so, yeah. They're on about 800 films now.
Helicopter. Jesus.
And this is our fourth exploding helicopter film.
How many Sly films have we done now?
This would be our third Sly film. Escape to Victory, Tango, and Cash and Tango.
Yeah.
And this, Cliffhanger.
Yeah. Cliff and Hanger.
So, in a sort of a bookend to the first scene, the three of them are sitting on the mountain waiting for rescue because the feds have been listening in and they're coming to rescue.
Yeah.
Now, I'd misremembered. I thought there was like a mirror of the opening scene in which now Gabe is hanging and Michael Rooker is holding onto him. But there isn't because that would have been good.
Yeah, I guess I'd already resolved that with the part where Gabe has to save Jesse.
Yeah, it would have been good if there was some sort of resolution between the pair of them. So, they are rescued.
Yeah.
And then the film ends.
Yep.
Quick. No nonsense ending. No final police squad. Ha! At the end.
No sort of 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
None of that. It's just
when they're back doing the rescue.
Yeah,
they're
back doing it.
Just ends.
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
So, Chris. Heathcliff Hanger. Much like Ethan Hunt, the manifestation of destiny.
Yeah.
Is Cliffhanger still any good?
Yes. Mm. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. I didn't think I would. I thought it would have been really cheesy, like a hangover from some of the 80s Stallone action movies, or as you said, where he dipped his toe into bad comedy. There's a couple of fairly obvious green screen moments.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I think the majority of the effects, because they were actually done outside where they were.
Yeah.
I think it's still really, really thrilling as far as that goes. Particularly that one that we said where just pans backwards and just looks amazing.
Yeah.
I think the casting is spot on. The performances are all good. Jesse doesn't really have that much to do. There's not that much chemistry between her and Stallone.
Apparently they went out with each other in real life for a while.
Really?
Yeah. You know.
I think it would have been better if Stallone and Rooker had gone out. Their chemistry's dynamite.
Yeah, they're great. They're good.
They're really good together.
Yeah. It could have been a spin-off series, Tucker and Walker.
Oh, Yeah.
Walker and Tucker.
Gabe and Hal.
Gabe and Hal, yeah.
That would have been good. But, yeah, it's thrilling. It's exciting. I thought it was fun. I thought it was funny. Doesn't take itself too seriously, particularly with some of the baddies.
Yeah.
The only issue is I think that first airplane thing goes on a bit too long. There's a bit too much, like we said, 1-2 tango tango, 1-2 tango tango. It goes on for fucking ages.
Yeah.
But that is just to set up that really good stunt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a reason for that as well.
Yeah.
When I got it from YouTube, it was like $5 to rent and like $8 to buy, so I bought it.
Okay.
So I've got it forever now.
Oh, nice.
Which means I'm going to sit down with Grace and watch it at some point, because I think she'd really enjoy that too. Yeah. So it's something I think I'm going to watch again and again.
Yeah, because it's not on any of the streamers, eh?
No.
It feels like it should be. It feels like prime sort of Netflix kind of retro action.
It probably
stuff.
Was, yeah. And they binned it with some other shit.
Yeah.
But no, very, very enjoyable. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said, really. It was just really good fun. I was skeptical when you suggested it. I was sort of like, oh, God, I'd completely forgotten about this. This will probably be okay, probably a bit dull in parts and maybe a bit slow in parts and just sort of okay for its time. Yeah, I couldn't have been more wrong. I think it is beautifully made. You know, I've said it multiple times throughout this episode, but I think it was like Bond level of set pieces, the direction I was really impressed with. Mm. I've always thought of Rennie Harlan as basically a hack, you know, an action hack, a Jan de Bont or something, you know. you know, competent but no flair.
Yeah.
I think there were some really beautiful shots. Obviously, I think the cinematographer played a big part in some of that. Beautiful, elegant shots. Great action sequences. I thought it whipped along. I didn't mind the tango tango... left, right, down, up. I didn't mind that. Yeah, I just love seeing all these practically staged, real action. Yeah. It was refreshing in a world where fucking so much CG, you know, in a Marvel world, and a, you know, it's just so nice just to see actual practical effects.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was nominated for Best Visual Effects.
It was.
Lost to Jurassic Park.
Yeah, just so happened that the most impressive visual effects ever.
Yeah. That still looked great. And I think it was nominated for Best Sound and Best Sound Design too, and again, Lost to Jurassic Park. That's the sort of film I'll sort of look forward to chucking on for my son, or my sons. When
that's right, you heard it, plural. Yeah.
You know, when they're sort of 10 or something.
Yeah.
A little bit of a nice, fun surprise for them. So yeah, I really enjoyed this. Wonderful. I really, really liked this. Oh. I'm amazed at how much I enjoyed
this. It's great when that happens.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think it's really underrated, actually, because I just don't think it's a film people talk about.
No.
I think it should be sort of talked about in the same breath as Speed and those kind of films.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dumb, but really fun.
Yeah.
And thrilling. Yeah.
It probably isn't mentioned in the same way as other Stallone vehicles. Because it's not a franchise.
No.
It's just a one-off.
Yeah.
Which leads me very nicely. I believe, someone mentioned this to me earlier, is that the sequel has finally been announced. Because it's been mooted for decades that they were going to make a sequel. I think at one point it was going to be called The Dam.
The Dam, yeah. The Dental Dam. It's about his sex life, yeah.
So he joins up and it's called The Dam United. Yeah. And that was always kind of, you know, but apparently very recently they've announced it's going to be like a legacy sequel about a group of mountain rescue where he comes back as Gabe, but he's sort of overseeing it all. God. Yeah.
Gabe walking the mountain of destiny. Fucking legacy sequels. I'm so fucking... I know you've just seen Indiana Jones and you enjoyed it.
Which I enjoyed very much,
But, oh, God, I'm just...
You know what's going to happen. They'll kill him off and it'll be like...
Don't fucking do that.
Jason Momoa will turn up and he'll be on Graham Norton being all nice.
Bring back Michael Rooker for it.
Yeah.
They'll kill off Rooker, I reckon.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It won't be good. There'll be a lot of CG in it. No one wants to, frankly, see Stallone fucking shuffling,
in either end of
shuffling
that.
Around a fucking hill right now.
It's the opening scene. Mountain exterior.
Yeah.
Gabe shuffles capital letters round the hill.
Yeah, the opening scene is a close up on his sweaty, gurning face and his straining.
He's just knackered painting a banana eating a monkey on a pane of glass.
Or it pans out and he's on the shitter.
Basically. Or is that cliffhanger a euphemism for Wonder Woman? Yeah. Wonderful. So, what's next? Rob's choice.
Okay, so my choice is Orca.
The killer whale.
The killer whale. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What's one better than a great white shark? A killer whale.
That's right. In top trumps.
Yeah, in top that trumps. Would win, yeah. Yeah, strength 8 to your great white shark's 7. I'll give you my rationale for this as well, because it is one that we have always talked about. We have always sort
of, yes, we have, yeah.
You know, we've mentioned it over the years. But after watching Cliffhanger, I looked back and I don't think we've done a bad film for a very, very long time.
No.
Unless I've missed something, I don't think we've done a bad film for God. No. I cannot even remember the last bad film. The
last shit film was Never Say Die.
Jeez, that was over a year ago.
That was March 2022.
Wow.
That was 20 episodes ago.
We've made a mockery of...
We have, haven't we? Yeah. I feel quite ashamed.
Yeah, we've made a mockery. So a Colin mockery of the whole premise. So I decided to go for something that could genuinely be quite fun or potentially more likely... utter shit.
Yeah. But yeah. Sticking to the rules. But you did like it when
I
you
did
first
like it.
Saw
well.
It.
I saw this when I was about 7 or 8 with my brother.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it late on a Saturday night and being genuinely spooked by it and watching the whole thing and having like a really good time watching it. You know, I'm not saying I want it to be bad. I'm not saying
No, not at all.
I think it will be bad. I'm just trying to get back to first principles here.
Yeah.
And take a risk.
The prime directive.
Yeah, the prime directive. Yeah.
That's fair. I'm looking forward to it. Fabulous. Let's do some housekeeping.
Mm.
If you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter at StillAnyGoodPod.
Instagram, StillAnyGoodPod.
And Threads, StillAnyGoodPod. We're also on Facebook, and if you want to email us, it's StillAnyGood@gmail.com. And please remember to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from.
Threads? We're on Threads now?
We're on Threads.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at Threads.
It's Instagram, Twitter.
Twitstagram. Yeah.
Yeah.
Twam.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alright. Yeah. Just something else. So we're on that too.
Okay.
Okay. Time to go.
Alrighty.
Yep. See you all soon.
See you.
See you. Bye.
For a manhunt. Yeah.
And so he basically just wants to. Who's out there? Who's out there? Come say hello to Rob.
That's what my
toby did. Oh, a face, scary face in the window. Come say hello.
Hey, Theo, how are you?
You haven't seen Rob for ages, have you? How was the play?
Good.
Yeah? Did you have a nice time?
Uh-huh.
Was Moana?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Did you go to Kmart as well?
No, I went to
Toby
House.
Oh, really?
I found the key.
You found the key?
Yeah.
What key?
The Barbie key.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I got two things instead of one.
Oh, what did you get?
I got a keychain and a $10 voucher.
Oh,
fantastic.
Nice.
$10 voucher.
Very good.
Yeah. You better go to bed. It's getting quite late, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm playing with my new doll.
Playing with your new doll, okay.
Right, see ya.
See ya, bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Got something to stick on the end of the episode. Here we are.
Yeah, I guess I'd already resolved that with the part where Gabe has to save
Jesse. Yeah. It would have been good if there was some sort of... Yeah. Resolution between the pair of them. They're outside again, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a sign there. Good night, Daddy.
Good night, Daddy.
Oh, nice.
Who's this?
Some adorable father-daughter hugging going on here. Very wholesome.